Thanks for being with us, everyone. Tonight, we're talking with Dr. Paul LaViolette, author of Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion. We're in our final hour and are opening up the phone lines for your questions. As we wait for those calls to come in, a couple of other things to talk to him about, some of them fairly exotic. Paul, what about time travel? What's your take on time travel, and can the energies that you're describing be used for something like that?
I don't believe it's possible to go back in time. That's something that comes out of standard physics, where time can go either way in the equations. Subquantum kinetics predicts only the forward flow of time in the physical, in our physical dimension. To do the idea of to go back in time, that's where you'd have to be hyperdimensional beings to do that sort of thing, and to assume that what's happening here is some sort of tape-recorded play that you could sort of go back to an earlier point in. I think that's the subject of science fiction. I think you can slow down time and therefore go into the future in a sense that your rate of flow of time would slow down relative to the outside world, which is something that is predicted in standard physics, the idea of going close to the speed of light. Also, if you change the gravity potential, your rate of time will slow down. So I think that is possible.
One of the things that Lazar had contended was that that this anti-gravity propulsion system that he was familiar with, powered by an antimatter reactor, in essence, it could... instead of you moving through space, say you're on another planet somewhere, another galaxy, you, in essence, you point it at, say, Earth, if you want to come here, and it pulls Earth towards you as opposed to traversing space. Does that make sense?
Well, I think some people have commented that if that's the case, it would suck everything into that spot as if it was like a black hole or something. And so it doesn't make sense that that would be possible. I think that you can develop tractor beams based on this microwave beam technology, where you create where you might intersect some beams at a distance and create a plasma in that area that would act like an anchor, and you could pull towards that spot. So in that sense, you could use beams to pull a craft, either push or pull. It's the way the wave would be shaped. It's just a flip of the switch, basically.
Okay. We're going to go to the phones. Wildcard line, Ray in Gainesville, Florida. Good morning, Ray.
Good evening, George and Paul. Listen, I believe that I can, in layman's turn, explain what gravity is and how the electric gravitic system works. But first, let me say that I believe that the interstellar federation of planets has us quarantined. Maybe our near Earth orbit, maybe that might include the moon, but, you know, like the Star Trek Interstellar Federation of Planets, they, because of our warlike nature, they don't want us out there. And if the gravity technology became generic, it would be like four-wheel drive technology degrading the forest and mountain roads. Okay, on the gravity thing, gravity is a Venturi effect. In other words, mass being attracted into antimatter or dark matter going through the vortex, through the nucleus, in layman's term, like going through the electrons going into the photon and neutron nucleus. The attraction of that is for the Venturi effect. For layman's, airplanes use this technology. It's like matter. Any element passing by another element will create a vacuum or create an attraction. And that's how airplanes work. The wind flowing over the wing creates a vacuum. And the same with molecules. One molecule, the electron being attracted into itself in the antimatter
is
and then back
question,
out in the matter.
Yeah, Ray, did you have a question for Paul?
Well, I was just going to make the comment. I just wonder if Paul could agree with that and what... isn't it that the electricity flows from negative to positive, and when you create a great deal of a bias on one side, you attract the gravity into that, absorb the gravity rather than be there being a vacuum. Do you agree with that, Paul?
That you say it again about absorbing what?
Okay, well, you said that they had a large positive shell circle and then a very small negative in it. That electricity, if I'm not mistaken, travels from negative to positive, and by being attracted to that positive disk, that it absorbs the gravity waves rather than the gravity waves affecting the matter.
Yeah. Well, what I would suggest, it's in my book in simple terms, and it's better shown with pictures. It's difficult over the air to explain a lot of these things. Basically, the force on the negative electrode going up is greater than the force on the positive electrode pushing down, so the whole craft moves up. Some of this you can find on my website, etheric.com. That's etheric.com. It has both information on anti-gravity and on subquantum kinetics, the physics behind this. And there's some files you can download, some radio interviews and video things. So it might be
okay.
A good resource.
Hey, Ray, you've done some of your homework. That was an interesting exposition there. Thanks for the call. We're going to go to Tim in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, Paul, and oh, my goodness, I forgot your name. Oh, George.
Love you a lot.
Okay. I just wanted to know what you thought of the sighting I had. I've had three sightings, significant, but two of ours and one of theirs.
Why don't we talk about the one of theirs? What'd you see of theirs?
Okay, theirs was a flying wing. It was electroluminescent. It looked very much like the color of a full moon. It was as bright as it can get. And it had three blue stripes down each side. It was flying right over me and no sound at all and no visible means of propulsion. And the reason I know it wasn't one of ours is because it's so dang conspicuous.
Paul, any thoughts?
Yeah, well, electrogravitic propulsion or field propulsion would have the characteristics where you would have not much sound. If there was a sound, you might hear a slight humming sound.
And would it be bright like he's describing?
Yeah, you would have luminosity created. When you have high voltage electric potentials, you're ionizing the air around that, just like from a Van de Graaff generator type of thing, if you ever looked at one in the dark. So these are indications that they would be using high-voltage electricity or somehow generating high-voltage potentials around the craft. They could be producing high voltages in the ether, if you accept the idea of an ether, which would be far higher than you could create just by putting ions in the air. So there's technology. These technologies become understood in a different way when you start understanding about the ether.
I guess maybe it could be either ours or theirs, what Tim saw. Thanks for the call, Tim. We're going to take our break now. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Paul LaViolette and Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp. We're talking with Dr. Paul LaViolette about secrets of anti-gravity propulsion going east of the Rockies, Wally, in Rapid City, South Dakota. Hi, Wally.
Yeah. How are you tonight?
Okay.
Hey, listen, I really enjoy your program. I've got a question concerning Area 21. Is that okay?
Or Area 51, you mean?
Area 51, yes.
Okay.
A while back, you had a program where a pilot flew into Area 51, and he was supposedly shot down, eventually shot down and just disappeared from the air. I was just wondering a little, have you done any follow-up on that to know exactly what happened?
Yeah, I don't know of any that have been shot down. I know a lot of that have strayed into that airspace and then been forced down or reprimanded after they land. But I think you might have seen somebody else's story. But I don't know of anyone that's been shot down out there. There have been plenty of plane crashes in that area because, it's a major testing area. But
yeah.
Sorry, Wally. I don't know anything about any being shot down. Do you have more information?
Yes, it was on your program, and he was describing what was happening. He was flying over Area 51, and he mentioned that these planes eventually were flying at him, and then they were shooting at him, and eventually he just went off the air. And I was just wondering what happened there.
Nope, I don't think so. The only one I can think of is Bruce Burgess, a British documentary guy who flew over, and he had the camera rolling as he was sort of intercepted by a couple of fighter planes, but he wasn't shot down, and he's alive and well. Thanks for the call, Wally. We're going to go west of the Rockies.
Yes,
Phil in Thanks. West of the Rockies, Phil in Redlands, California. Hi, Phil.
Good evening, George. Good evening.
Howdy.
Dr. Paul.
Good evening.
What's that?
Good evening. What's on your mind?
Yes, I got a two-part question. I've seen a perfectly round saucer come into a Southern California mountain community in 2001. And they came in low at night, and some clouds and fog had moved in that night. And I seen it through the it was low enough I could see it through the clouds. And the light, they came in with the lights turned off. And when they went over my head, they turned the lights on, and it looked like a wheel going around it, inside of it, around the edge of it. Could that have been the, like, magnets on a rail type of thing? And then after they went over me, they turned the lights off, and I heard them land. In the next few days, I see a bunch of strange people walking by my house saying hi to me. And the basic message of the people from the ship is you can do anything you want to do, just be good. I think they're putting us on probation to see who can just be good, because when you're doing good to yourself, and when you do bad, bad happens to you. And it's, you know, a spiritual law that cannot be revoked. And I think they're getting ready to do a mass rescue, from what I gathered from what they said. Anyway, that question was about the rail magnet thing on that. And then the second part of the question, I had subscribed to a top intelligence news source back in the late 70s to early 80s that said that Russia did develop the electrogravitic cosmospheres, and they could go from ground level to 800 miles high into space and hover over any spot on Earth without moving. And at 100 miles up, they could tap the electromagnetic field of the Earth to go over 9,000 miles an hour around the Earth. And they were also mass-producing those things like a car assembly line, according to my intelligence source. Do you think there could be any truth to that? Oh, yeah, and by the way, they were all manned with charged particle beam energy ray weapons powered by portable nuclear power packs. And that's all I got to say tonight.
Okay, and, Phil, well, that's plenty to chew on there. Let's start with the Russian program first. Paul, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it sounds plausible to me. If the U.S. had a program to develop this sort of thing, Russians would have too. And this is the kind of thing that would be possible. So it's interesting that they were actually mass producing these. Who knows? We probably had some mass production facility for other things besides the B-2 bomber. We were aware of at least, 2021 B-2 bombers. But maybe, who knows, there might be a whole fleet of unacknowledged craft. You're familiar with Gary McKinnon's discovery on the Internet. They showed he tapped into some archive in the, the National Space Authority.
I think NASA stuff. This was among the things he hacked into, but he was talking about finding evidence of a secret space program, right?
The Air Space Command, I guess it was. They talked about ship-to-ship transfers, and they had names of vessels that were certainly not Navy vessels, and extraterrestrial crew. So it conjures up the idea of Star Trek kind of vessels out there that we are monitoring. Now, whether there's some policy to keep these near the Earth and not to go out to the planets, I can't believe that. I think that from what I've gathered from contacts with people that that we do travel out to the planets. So what was the other part of the question?
The first part of Phil's question was about this. Yeah, the roller, this round thing. That, yeah. Right.
I don't know. Were rollers actually seen in the sighting, or you're just guessing that there were rollers?
I think he said that he saw them. That it was a circular kind of a craft. Phil, you still there? He's gone. He's gone.
Okay. Well, if they were actually seen, it might be something similar to the Searle disk. Also, anything rotating like that where you can create a mass rotation will, to some extent, scramble the gravity field. Because gravity, what it is, it's if you think of an ether where there's an actual flux of, we could call it geons, falling into the Earth, like a low concentration in the center of the Earth, it's sucking these geons down. If instead of having them go down, if you can sort of scramble them so that you pump them out with your craft, pump them out laterally, the gravity gradient across your craft will disappear. And so I think this is the main concept behind Searle's disk.
We're going to get one more call in before our next break. First-time caller, Bruce in Boston. Good morning, Bruce.
Greetings and good morning, gentlemen. First time, long time here. This has been a very fascinating discussion. And Dr. LaViolette, this is something that has enlightened me greatly. My question to you is, do you have any knowledge of the John Malewski's theory of superlight radiation? And does it in any way relate to your work?
No. Could you say just briefly about what his theory is?
Well, simply his theory is of the electromagnetic radiation, in which superlight itself is a magnetoelectric radiation. Pretty much it states the fact that light itself, superlight itself, is the conductor, critical force of vital, of what we call vital life force. And what it is basically is
you use the word superlight. I'm not sure what that means. Is that you're talking about electromagnetic waves or something else?
Well, in essence, electromagnetic waves is what we call electromagnetic radiation. But superlight itself is magnetic or magnetoelectric radiation. Something that he's a theory that he's developed that this particular source of frequency of light itself has emanates from the black hole that we see in the middle of most of our galaxies. It's the conducting force of what we ourselves have in tune to life or life force.
Okay, Paul, does this ring a bell?
Like a whole other theory. I haven't heard about it, it's difficult to make sense out of it just in a short time.
Bruce, it might be too complicated of a topic for us to tackle in just a couple of minutes. So maybe we're going to have to send us an email. I'll forward it to Paul, and we'll figure out what you mean by super light. Paul, a quick question before we go to this break. You know, when you talk about like jumping to hyperspace and you see in the movies Star Trek and Star Wars, is that the kind of thing that would actually happen in the technology you're talking about?
Well, you where they talk about a warp drive,
right?
I believe in this new technology, you'd talk about gradient drive because you wouldn't be really warping space-time because that's a general relativity concept. You're dealing with gradients in the ether. And with something like a Podkleinoff drive where you push at superluminal speeds, you could jump into a hyperdrive, so to speak.
All right. Well, we'll jump back more into that after this break. Stay with us. We have more of your questions for Dr. Paul LaViolette and the secrets of anti-gravity propulsion here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, everyone. Thanks for staying with us. We're in the home stretch with our guest, Dr. Paul LaViolette, who's given us a lot to chew on tonight. Secrets of anti-gravity propulsion, whether or not we've got a secret space program, B-2s that use anti-gravity propulsion systems to leave the atmosphere, bases on the moon. When we come back, we'll get to as many of your calls as we can. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. Our guest, Dr. Paul LaViolette, talking about secrets of anti-gravity propulsion. We're going to the phones. Ben on the wildcard line calling from Gold Beach, Oregon. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how you doing there, George and Dr. LaViolette? I have a question that, being a communications technician for 35 years, and of course I'd have to ask this, how do they communicate in these vehicles that you're talking about?
That's a good question.
I don't know. I couldn't say. We can, you know, maybe have some guesses. I've written a book called Secrets, Decoding the Message of the Pulsars, in which I suggest that pulsar beacons are sort of like galactic GPS beacons used for navigation. So this way they can tell where they are in the galaxy. So this is the way they sort of triangulate their position with that. As to how they would communicate, Brown himself has developed a transmitter using gravity waves, actually transmitter and receiver, and had displayed this to the Navy back in the 50s, where he was able to transmit pulses from one room to the other. And it's said that he had actually an audio radio where he was able to communicate to close members of his group using gravity wave pulses or electrogravitic pulses. And nobody else would be able to pick this up because you would have had to know the technology he was using to do this. So this would be an alternative to using electromagnetic communication.
So it would explain why none of us here on Earth are picking up any conversations and those guys out there in space.
Right. There could also be, they could be using also these Tesla-type waves, shock front-type waves, something along that line would be another possibility.
Good question, Ben. Appreciate it. Wildcard line, Mike in Los Angeles. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, George, doctor. I had a question for the doctor based on the fact that 5.5 years ago I saw one of these vehicles. It was only about these black triangles. It was only about 120 feet overhead off a highway about 70 miles west of Gallup, New Mexico. And it seemed to be having trouble with its electrogravitic propulsion, if that's what you call it. And it had some type of reaction motor in the end where these louvers opened up, and it wasn't a turbine because it didn't sound, and the smell that came from the exhaust wasn't a turbine. And it ignited this and took off. And I'm wondering if and I've heard other stories or read other things that many of these vehicles seem to have a hybrid technology. Does this indicate that there's a limitation to this gravitic technology, or that it's just not matured enough?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what you saw. Maybe they were emitting ions. Could it have been?
No, it had louvers in the. There was a clanking coming from it, and they seemed to be having difficulty with this. And I know it was some type of electromagnetic, because it made all the hair on our arms stand up, and when you rub it down, your hair on your arms would crackle. And there was a low, almost inaudible hum that was hurting our ears, but there was a clanking coming from inside of this black triangle. Sounded like the armature on an old-style MRI when they rotated the waveguide around. And then at the end, when it got a little ways away from us, diagonal to the road, we could see it had these square louvers in the end. And when it got several hundred yards away from the road, the louvers opened up, and they lighted off these chemical reaction engines, and a big puff of black and yellow smoke that did not smell anything like a petroleum distillate exhausted out, and then it took off with a roar.
Very interesting. I don't know what to make of it, what the clanking sound would be. Maybe it was, like you say, a hybrid vehicle. It could have had something similar to a Searle disc that was revolving inside as a way of reducing gravity. The hair standing up in your arms sounds like they were creating a high voltage field in the surrounding space or in the ether. So that would explain that effect. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Mike. You know, in your book, The Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, you discussed the Cash Landrum case, pretty famous UFO case that right. sort of sounded like what somewhat like what Mike was describing, a craft that seemed to be in some kind of difficulty.
Right. And there they had flames coming from the bottom, which could have been a flame jet generator, similar to what Brown was talking about for generating the high voltages. And it sounds like the symptoms of the Cash Landrum had were due to microwave exposure. So it could have been a version of the Sky Vault craft, maybe an early version, where they were projecting down a microwave beam. And then they had their car parked near this, so maybe the beam sort of locked onto them, and they got this extreme exposure. If you look at the effects, they are similar to the effects you would get from microwave exposure. At the time of their court case, the lawyer apparently didn't have any information about Project Sky Vault, which is unfortunate. Maybe they could have won the case if they'd known more about what was going on. But yeah,
that's a sad story. Thanks for the call, Mike. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Ed in Porter, Texas. What's on your mind, Ed?
Yeah, I got a question for the doctor. Ask him if he's ever heard, does he think the ancient Earthlings, say back in B.C., had this type of technology or understood this technology?
Well, you see in the Indian scriptures about flying devices that resemble electrogravitic kind of craft. They don't seem to be rocket-propelled. You find sightings, for example, in some of the ancient Greek writings where there was a battle going on between two factions, and suddenly this what they call flying shield appears in the sky and sort of frightens everyone, and they call a truce at that point. They don't know what this is, sign of the gods or something. So there were sightings in ancient times. Whether they were developed by former civilization, advanced civilization, this is a possibility that's discussed. That it could have been, and that maybe civilization living in the past, which has been somehow erased by time, could have had space travel.
Or they were from somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, maybe we were colonized from somewhere
thanks.
Else.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed. I guess we're just guessing on that one, but thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Doug in California. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, this kind of ties into the last answer. Given the technology that you've discussed here, Dr. Levulet, I'm just wondering if a ballistic missile attack from either North Korea or Iran would even be possible. Do you worry about that given...
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
We have the technology to shoot down the missile before it's even very far above the ground, you know, with satellites. The same beam technology, the microwave beam technology is used to propel these craft, can be used to target rockets and disable them. You know, they can basically fry all the electronic circuits in the rocket, its guidance system and everything, and it would crash over the country that was setting it off. So I don't think that the military is really that afraid. I think this is all posturing. You know, what's going on about fear of attack.
I guess the question would be whether we would use it to take down a missile like that. I guess we'd have to, but wouldn't it let the cat out of the bag?
Well, I don't think people would know it was used. They would figure, well, it was a malfunction of the rocket, that the people who had built this didn't know how to build the rocket well enough, and it failed.
Ah. Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for the call, Doug.
Some suggestions that such a technology was even used to bring down the World Trade Center.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really interesting question. We could do a whole show on that. That's an interesting possibility. I wish we weren't at the end of this program. We could go into it. First-time caller, David in Omaha. Hi, David.
Hello. My question is actually in relationship to black holes. Is the anti-gravity aspect able to enter into a black hole with a vehicle and then come out again?
Okay. here we're you're dealing in the framework. So you've been taught all this stuff based on the current physics technology, physics paradigm. Black holes is something that's a general relativistic concept. You have to pretty much chuck that out the window. And in my book, Subquantum Kinetics and Genesis of the Cosmos, I give examples why black holes really don't exist. You know, in fact, a lot of astronomers have come out against the idea. You do have very massive stars, maybe millions or even billions of solar masses, and they don't collapse because they're generating so much energy inside. It's not due to just fusion energy. There are other energy sources, like genetic energy, which I described. There's a lot more. You can learn a lot more about this on my website, etheric.com, etheric.com. Also, Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion is available there, as are other videos. I don't think that there is such a thing as a black hole.
Wow, that's going to make you popular with physicists and astronomers.
Yeah, I definitely have my own views on things. I think that there's a lot of fiction out there that's put out as fact. Yeah. Basically, have they ever really seen a black hole that's not putting out any energy? I mean, that's what you'd really have to have. Every object that they've seen is an energy source. It's profusely radiating energy, whether it might not necessarily be all time visible, but it's putting out X-rays, cosmic rays. So, in fact, there's some physicists I've heard, they have nightmares of a small black hole coming through their bedroom at night and swallowing them up. It's really too bad, you know, because these are all fantasies.
Yeah, well, that could ruin your day, that's for sure. David, thanks for the call. We're going to go to the wild card line. Tony in Seattle. Good morning, Tony. How you doing?
Yeah, I've heard that Newton thought that his version of ether, he described as Jesus Christ. Can you describe how your version of ether is different than the classical version of ether?
Yeah. It's an active ether. It's more along the ideas of alchemy. Think of a reactive medium. It's powered by an energy source that would not be electromagnetic. You can't talk about energy at that level. It's at the subquantum level. It's analogies to a chemical reaction, except instead of dealing at the chemical level, you're dealing at an etheric level, so below the subatomic level. So it comes to a totally different view. Instead of the universe being something that was created at a distant time in the past and is gradually running down, the idea of sort of entropy, it's a different view where the universe is continually being created. Matter and energy are being created this moment, and that the universe evolved. And as I discuss on my website, I made a prediction about that galaxies would gradually grow in size over time, if this was true, and that's exactly what they found with the Hubble telescope. Galaxies were smaller in the distant past. So with this view, like the table in front of you, would disappear if it were not for this continual transformation, this flux, this subquantum flux that's going on. It's almost close to the idea of the Force in Star Wars, something that's almost alive, conscious even. And in fact, maybe the ether has consciousness. You know, these are things that can be considered. Certainly, with this view, space is not empty. It's occupied by something, and it's something that's very dynamic and active. And when you take this approach, a lot of the problems that physics is having disappear. You know, now, suddenly, instead of the universe being a closed system, you view it as an open system, with the possibility of being able to violate the first law of thermodynamics, that you can create energy out of seemingly nowhere, because that's possible in an open system, and most scientists will acknowledge that.
It's comparable how you frame, comparable to zero point?
Right, yeah. Yeah, in an open system, disorder can go towards order. You're drawing. You can think of it as drawing on that vast river of energy that's sustaining the universe. Just to sustain an object that looks like it's not moving or anything, it's not doing anything, that requires a huge amount of etheric flux to do that. This whole concept ties into mystical traditions, into the esoteric writings. I go into that in my other book, Genesis of the Cosmos, that really this is not a new idea. The subquantum kinetics theory I have developed is based on systems theory, which is a modern development. Systems theory has gone into a lot of fields and completely revolutionized them. Like, for example, business administration was totally revolutionized by systems concepts. And all I've done is taken accepted systems concepts and brought them into physics. And that's results in quite a revolutionary change, which physicists have unfortunately opposed rather than saying, hey, you know, here's a new way of looking at things. They've actually tended to resist looking at things differently. They'd rather look at the universe as a closed system with believing in Big Bang theory rather than look at the evidence that actually has shot down the Big Bang theory.
Well, what we know about scientists, that's hardly surprising. Tony, thanks for that call. Wildcard line, Steve in Tulsa. Good morning, Steve.
Thanks, George. Sure. Yes, Doctor, I kind of have a two-part question. Referring back to the B-2 bomber, It uses an electrogravitic propulsion. Does that actually cut off? You mentioned charging, let's say, with a high voltage on the front leading edge of the aircraft.
Yeah.
Is that creating a force field that the plane is – now, is that cutting off the gravity?
In that case, it's used for forward propulsion, where they would be dumping positive ions in front of the craft and negative behind. So the positive ions would go into the bow shock front, goes around the craft, so like it'd be a big dish-shaped area of positive ions ahead of the craft. So that would create this non-uniform electric field across the craft, which would create unbalanced forces on the craft, pushing it forward, but it would also have an electrogravitic effect due to the coupling between electricity and gravitation that Brown demonstrated. So you'd have both effects going on together. Then it's possible they also have vertical thrusters, which would allow it to stand motionless in space or in the air, which would be similar to the thrusters Brown had developed. In my book, I talk about an example of how this would be possible, just taking data that has been released about Brown's test results and just scaling it up, and you see it's entirely possible if you had something like, I don't know, a few hundred of these thrusters in the wing of the craft.
Hey, Paul, we're going to have to cut it off. That music is telling us the program's about over. Steve, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. Paul LaViolette, the author of Secrets of Anti-Gravity Propulsion, gave us a lot to chew on tonight. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. I'd love to know if, since the book came out, whether you have any new sources of information coming forward, but we'll wait until the next time we have you on. Hope you enjoy your day there in Athens, Greece.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Happy to be on your show, George.
Great. Thanks very much. Thank you all as well. I'll see you next Sunday night. And, of course, George and Ian will be here in between now and then. Thanks, everyone. Good night from Coast to Coast AM.